They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, listening audience, to the Magellans at the Movies. I am Nathan Mogulyines, joined as always by my brother, Elliot Mogulyines. Elliot, do you have anything you want to say to the people?
Hello, people.
Great, good job. The big news, this is what we were talking about last week, but the big news, Superman is out right now. The first hope of this new DCU, can DC pull it together and get a cinematic universe off the ground? They put James Gunn in the driver's seat. Elliot, I have seen this movie. I went to it on Tuesday, and I gotta say, I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about this DC universe. This is not the greatest superhero movie I've ever seen. I saw some people comparing it to the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, which I don't think is, I think those movies are a little bit better, except for the third one, obviously. But I do think this movie is a really good Superman flick. It's probably the best Superman flick we've gotten. It's the best Superman movie I've seen, at least. I've only seen the original and Man of Steel, but I think it really captures Superman. I think the choices they make in terms of kickstarting the cinematic universe. Almost every character in this movie appears as pretty much a fully fleshed out character. It feels kind of like you've missed the first season of the TV show and now you're watching the premiere of season two. There's a lot of characters who it's very clear have a very strong set in stone personality and you've only spent 12 seconds with them. And I think that's a really smart way to go into the cinematic universe. I don't think trying to do a Marvel thing where you slowly build it up through introducing different characters and building to a thing is going to be the right way for them to do it. I think it's way too late in the game to try to do something like that, and that's clearly not what they're going for, and I think it serves them really well. Nicholas Holt does an incredible job as Lex Luthor. He's really the standout for me. David Corenswet is great as Superman. Rachel Brosnahan is really good as Lois Lane. And yeah, the movie is just, it's really solid. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought there's more than a few moments in it that I just got a huge kick out of it. It's not a perfect movie. There's some other issues, but I think if you haven't seen it, I think it's well worth going to see. I think you'll probably enjoy it a fair amount, I think. If you've liked previous Superman movies, I think you'll probably like this. If you like superhero movies, I think there is a very good chance that you would enjoy this. So that's kind of my brief thoughts review for the movie. You know, go out and see it. If you're at all interested, I think you should go see it.
Well, nice. And it should be noted that Nathan is hardly in the minority here. Superman made, what was it, like $200 million over the weekend?
Did very
well. Yep, very strong performance. And the consensus seems to be holding that this is a movie that most people, I would say the overwhelming majority of people, enjoy to some extent. Mm-hmm. So I'll be seeing it tomorrow morning. I'm going to an 11 a.m. showing on a weekday to try to minimize crowds.
I love those. Weekday morning showings, even weekend morning showing, like very few people. The movie theater here in my town has showings sometimes as early as like 9 o'clock in the morning. Gosh, I love doing that. You go to the 9 o'clock showing, you get out, go get lunch by yourself. Yeah, it's so fun.
Yeah, I saw Killers of the Flower Moon at a 9 a.m.
wow.
showing. That was at
time.
Jordan Creek.
Yeah. So good time to see that movie. That's a long flick.
Yeah, we had lunch once we were done with it. Me and Dad and Ryan are the ones who
nice.
Went to see it.
Nice.
Well, Nathan, I've got two trailers that were released today want to hear if your reaction is not giving me great vibes here. But there was a trailer for Mortal Kombat 2. Did you see that?
No, I don't care about that.
Well, I watched... This is a sequel to the 2021, I think, movie. I watched that movie on a streaming service, and I very much did not care for it. This movie does not look like it. It's going to change that, but it's got Carl Urban as Johnny Cage, and I really like Carl Urban. Not to say that I'm ever going to watch this movie. I'm just saying I like Carl Urban. And then the first official trailer, so not just a teaser, but a full trailer for Tron Ares. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see this one. Good grief. I'm not a betting man. I think gambling is not a great way to spend your money unless you're planning on losing your money. But if I were a gambling man, I would try to find some way to put all of my money on this movie flopping horrendously. We talked about this when we reviewed Tron Legacy, but they've got a director that I don't really trust to be delivering a product of quality, certainly not a director who knows the kind of tone and style that these Tron movies have been going for the two movies that they've made. Jared Leto as the lead is just such an astonishingly terrible... I'm pretty sure the last movie he led was Morbius, and we all know how well that film did critically and commercially. And yeah, this trailer still just looks... It just looks stupid. I just don't see why anyone would be excited for this outside of people who are like really into Nine Inch Nails or diehard fans of the original, which I don't even think there are that many diehard fans of the original. Certainly not enough to justify what has to be a gigantic price tag for this movie. So, this trailer did nothing to make me think that this movie is going to be a success or good.
I agree. I was not impressed by this. I thought maybe it was like slightly better than the first teaser, but the apparent plot details, the involvement of Jared Leto, none of these are green flags. They are very red. I'll be honest though, there were some shots in the trailer that I was like, actually looks pretty, like visually speaking, that's pretty striking, I have to admit.
Yeah.
But again, it's not like I'm gonna watch this movie. Or maybe I will. When it's like a dollar to rent.
At Redbox.
Like that. Yeah, Redbox. Do they still have Redboxes?
I haven't seen one recently, but maybe somewhere.
Yeah, I remember so many afternoon trips, shopping trips with Dad. Oh, you want to stop by Redbox? See what's on there?
Yeah.
And sometimes it was, sometimes it wasn't. It added a little bit of I don't know, a little bit of excitement to our outings.
While we're waxing nostalgic, let's maybe get into this movie, which is maybe a bit of a nostalgic movie for us. Elliot, you picked Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. This is a little surprising to me because it's not the two Indiana Jones movies that we put on our best of the 80s list. It is notably the one that was left out of that list. Ellie, why'd you pick this? And, you know, let the people know what the deal is if they're not familiar with this thing.
Yeah, so this is Temple of Doom, directed by Steven Spielberg. George Lucas is involved somehow. I've never actually been able to figure out what he did with these movies. Was he like a writer or something?
The story is attributed to him, and then he's a producer on most of them, I think. So I think he just came up with ideas for stuff. I know he came up with the idea for the original one with Spielberg, because the story's a bit of a legend at this point, that Lucas was so nervous about the opening weekend results for Star Wars that he went on a little retreat, weekend retreat thing with Spielberg, and while they were at this retreat, they talked about doing like a James Bond-esque thing with an archaeologist as a protagonist, and that eventually became Indiana Jones.
Yes. Famous story. And now you've made me forget what I was saying. So just Temple of Doom, Spielberg, he's there. George Lucas, he's there. Most people are back. Lawrence Kasdan did not return as the writer. Mm. Specifically because he did not like the idea for the movie. So this is a sequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is the middle child of the original Indiana Jones trilogy, flanked on either side by two cinematic behemoths. Mm. And it is... at least before Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out, this was widely held to be the worst Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. It's much darker tone. Just the like different vision that it had for the character and the world. It's intense violence. Another legendary story, this movie was instrumental in the development of the PG-13 rating, mm-hmm. because it was rated PG on release. And parents took their children to the theaters, and they saw a guy's heart getting ripped out. The reason I chose this is because I wanted to do an original Indiana Jones movie, and I honestly could not think of enough to say about Raiders or Last Crusade. Like, what is there to say? This movie is perfect. This movie is even perfecter. And I had recently rewatched Temple of Doom, and I actually think that it's very instructive in illuminating in the places where Temple of Doom does not work. I think it's actually very instructive in showing us what does work about Indiana Jones and when he's at his best. Mm. And honestly, I just think that this would be the most interesting one to talk about because it is so different. And it offers such a rich ground, a fertile ground in which to draw contrasts and comparisons with the rest of the franchise. And that's my very strange reason for wanting to review this. I remember very distinctly the first time watching this. It was one of those times when it was just the boys, the lads.
Yep.
Mom and Lydia really were not present for a lot of our formative cinematic experiences. And we got just the scratchiest, roughest rental from Family Video of Temple of Doom. And we managed to plow our way through it. I honestly think there was like 10 minutes of this movie that we did not see until we watched it on an actually good copy.
Yeah.
And at the time, I loved it, right? I was a kid. I loved everything Indiana Jones. I have such a strong memory of us after the movie was done, right? And Dad should not have shown this movie to us right before bed, because of course we were just so hyped up by the thing. We were running around and reenacting scenes and stuff and making jokes. And yeah, we were, or at least to my memory, maybe Nathan remembers us being completely sober-minded afterwards, that it was total chaos once the movie was over. And so, yeah, I'm just going to come out and say it. I did not hate this movie. And honestly, I've never hated Temple of Doom, although I do believe that it is the worst of the original trilogy. And there is some stuff in this movie that I do not like. There's some stuff that I think is actually of pretty low quality. But I have to say, I still thought this movie was pretty darn good. I mean, everything that's, or a lot about what's great about Indiana Jones is kind of hard to mess up with this team, this specific principal creative team, like Harrison Ford, Spielberg, Lucas, right? You're going to struggle. These people, these men and women are at their prime in this movie. So you're going to struggle to come up with something that's just across the board bad. And honestly, I was really digging the darker tone and the just like more intense aspects of it. I think that this movie has a bit of a pacing problem. I think that the villains are weaker than the Nazis. I did not care for. Well, I'm getting too much into it. Basically, what I'm saying is that I think this movie is pretty good. Indiana Jones, the original Indiana Jones, at his worst, is still better than a lot of. I mean, if you say this movie is not as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark or Last Crusade, right? That's like 90% of all movies. So,
yeah,
it doesn't mean that it's bad. And I thought this movie was. I thought this movie was pretty good, despite it having some pretty serious flaws. But Nathan, what do you think? Do you remember? Am I completely off in my memory of our original watch? And what did you think? Rewatching.
I must have the worst memory of like anyone on earth, because I feel like so many people tell me stories about my child, like you, this happens on the podcast a lot. You're younger than me and you tell me stories about things you remember. And I'm like, I'm older than you. How do I not remember this? I don't remember us being rambunctious following this movie. I certainly believe it. I know we loved Indiana Jones. We liked playing that stupid Indiana Jones game with a Brazilian villain for whatever reason.
Because it's our heritage.
I know. Why do we make it the villain, though?
I don't know.
I do remember watching this. I remember, yes, it being a boys' night. I remember the disc being very scratchy. I honestly don't know if I have seen this movie since that initial watch, though. Because I think I just never bothered to. I don't remember loving it as a child. I certainly enjoyed it in the same way I enjoyed all the Indiana Jones movies. But I don't think it was something that we revisited very often. I don't think I had a strong enough affinity for it that I wanted to revisit it. So this was kind of fun for me, rewatching it for the podcast. And I think I would kind of agree with a lot of what you would say, that I don't hate the movie. I don't think it's certainly not as bad as Dial of Destiny, which we did a review of when it came out, or Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But again, this kind of like saying it's not as good as The Last Crusade, saying it's better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that's like also 90% of all movies. We're not, right now we're just putting it right in the middle. And I think right in the middle is about where the movie lands for me. I think the tone is the biggest thing that people take issue with. And I do think it's a fair thing to take issue with. I think what I love about Raiders and Last Crusade is how amazingly they capture this pulpy tone of a lot of the movies that I loved as a kid. If you think of Star Wars, that has a very similar kind of pulpy tone to this. I think Independence Day kind of has a similar tone, that it's kind of cartoonish. But I think the thing that I've appreciated as I've grown up about Last Crusade and Raiders is that it's cartoonish in its action, but then the characters are like genuinely very good characters. Indiana Jones is a fantastic, just iconic character. And then the side characters he's surrounded with are funny. They're fun to be around. The villains are great, very compelling villains in the sense that, you know, Nazis are easily hateable. Belloc is such a great villain representing kind of an evil version of Indiana Jones. And then Sean Connery, maybe one of the greatest side characters of all time as Indiana Jones's dad in The Last Crusade, this movie just doesn't have some of those things. The villains, I think, are just cartoonishly evil in a way that is bad, in my opinion. The sidekicks, Short Round is a ton of fun. He's fantastic. It is, I can't believe they didn't bring back him back for Dial of Destiny or something. I mean, Kehu Kwan was having a renaissance when they were making Dial of Destiny. How do you miss bringing him back? And he's so much fun in this movie. He's a great foil to Indiana Jones. He's interesting. I think he's kind of a classic, maybe not a classic archetype, but he's a recognizable archetype as the kid that the hero is kind of dragging around. But then we get, you know, Indiana Jones is kind of rude in this movie in a lot of places. I don't think he's as charismatic or funny as he is in the other movies. Willie is just straight up annoying at a lot of points in the movie. She is way worse than someone like Marion, who is a very capable character who's actively helping Indiana Jones get things done. Willie doesn't do anything in this entire movie. The one scene where she's contributing, she has to be like screamed at in order for her to pull the lever to save them when they're in the room. So I think overall the movie just fails in a lot of the ways where these other two movies succeed, and I think that's what really brings it down. So I agree with you. It is interesting as just another way of seeing how good Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark are, is to watch a movie where you're like, oh, this is not doing those things as well as those other two.
Interesting. Well, I want to start with what I think kind of unlocked this movie for me. Is this movie, so yes, this movie is very different from Raiders and Last Crusade, because if you didn't know, this movie takes place in India, British controlled India.
Yep.
And the movie has a pretty favorable view of the British administration, which I think is interesting. But anyway, it concerns Indiana Jones's attempts to find the Sankara stones, which I'm not 100% sure if they're actual things in Hindu legends, but he's trying to get them for this village of people that used to have one that was stolen along with all their children, and the village is dying, and of course everyone wants their children back. So the bulk of the action takes place in the temple itself, which is being controlled by the Thuggee, which is an actual, well, a reputedly real cult of bandits from Indian history. The extent to which they were actually prevalent is a little bit murky, because there's every chance that this is kind of British sensationalism at work, because a lot of the, at least in the modern period, a lot of the stories that come that we have about Thuggee cults come from like British interrogations and stuff like that. And the British, in case you're wondering, did not actually administer India all that well, so there's every reason to take those stories with a grain of salt. But the Thuggee in the movie are a human sacrificing cult of worshippers of Kali, which is a Hindu, who is a Hindu god, goddess of destruction, I think. And they're trying to get the Sankara stones. There are 5 Sankara stones. They have 3. They're trying to get the last 2 with child slave labor, because the last 2 are like buried in the earth. So they're trying to mine them out. And then with that, they're going under the tutelage, or the stewardship, I should say, of Mola Ram. They're going to take over the world, which is obviously not in anyone's best interest except for the Thuggee. And the movie in general, I think that when you hear the word cult and human sacrifice, your first impression is actually going to be pretty accurate to this movie's general vibe, right? Like, there is a human sacrifice scene. The cultists they're walking around in a daze. They're performing these unholy rituals, and Mola Ram takes someone's heart out, and it's still beating. And they have the temple is built on like a volcano or something, because there's a giant pit of lava that they dump people into. And yeah, there's they're enslaving children, so it's very dark.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily. I think that time has kind of worn the edge off of this darkness a little bit, because, or certainly, time as I've experienced it, because right, I've seen much darker movies than this since then. But still, it is much more macabre. There's less of a focus on globetrotting. The vast majority of the movie takes place in this one location. In general, there's fewer like one-liners. Just the whole vibe is much darker. And the reason why I'm saying all of this nonsense, is because what I realized is that this still is pulpy. It's just pulp of a very different, very particular kind. So if Raiders and Last Crusade are the adventure serials of the 50s, Temple of Doom is the horror pulp of Weird Tales, which is a horror magazine, a very famous pulp magazine that was published in the 20s and 30s, right? So after World War I, the people have, because we've just had a global war, so suddenly everyone's more interested in the world at large. And so Weird Tales, this story, dude, it is straight out of the pages of one of these magazines. So they had stories that had titles like The Curse of the Pharaohs, or there's a story called The Last Living Buddhist, which is about a female Buddha. It's complete nonsense. It has nothing to do with actual Buddhism. But this is the kind of thing that we're dealing with here, right?
Yeah.
Is stories about people going into these last unvisited by Western European people areas of the map, and coming across something spectacular and disturbing and supernatural. And yes, what you're thinking, listener, it did get a little racist at times. But I am so fascinated by this magazine. I would so love to own a collection of Weird Tales. And yeah, I just think that this movie embodies that kind of, I don't know, exotic, at times fairly problematic, fascination with the doings of other peoples, which is to its benefit and its detriment, because, like I said, I was really into these scenes the darker parts of the movie, where the thuggy are sacrificing people and just being evil. And a lot of it is down to just, right, my fascination with this kind of storytelling that is no longer a thing anymore. Like, you could never write a story called The Curse of the Pharaohs anymore, because it would just be ridiculous. The Curse of the Pharaoh, right, no one believes in that anymore. And, yeah, there's just something about it that I found really compelling. And there's a lot of contributing factors to it. First of all, here's something that I was not expecting to say going into this rewatch. I really liked Mola Ram as a villain. And I think it's a lot down to the actor who I had his name and then I kind of forgot it. Yes, Amrish Puri, I'm not 100% sure. Amrish, who is a huge actor in India. Like, Wikipedia described him as one of the most important figures in the emerging Indian movie scene. He's been in over 450 movies.
Wow.
And I just thought he did great in this movie. And I think that if he was in like one more scene, or if he had five more lines of dialogue, I probably would have hated him. But because he is every bit the one-dimensional, mustache-twirling monster, but because of Amrish's performance of this right gleeful sadism to this character, and because he had a much larger presence in the movie than he did actual screen time, I don't know, I just thought he was super compelling. And he had a fantastic evil laugh, and his design is awesome. He looks sick. He's always shot in this heavy red light, so it looks like his eyes are glowing. So that's what I mean when I say that there's so much contributing to my appreciation for Mala Ram as a villain, that to me, he just became this kind of like force of nature, or this like otherworldly monster. And through that, I think I was able to really appreciate him and the performance by the actor. And I just like when he says, Kalima, Kalima, Kalima Shakti Day. I don't know what that means, but it sounds cool. So I just did a lot of talking. So now let's have Nathan do some talking. Basically, what I'm saying is that the tone really worked for me. And I think that I was able to connect with the kind of pulp that this movie was trying to reproduce.
Yeah, I really aggressively disagree with a lot of what you just said. This is one of the times where...
Okay, well, some of that was, right, historical fact that sure, it's not actually possible to disagree with.
I agree with you in the sense that I see the same things in terms of what type of pulpy action stories this Indiana Jones movie is pulling from. I think, like I said at the beginning, I think it just fails to do anything interesting with them in the ways... Or do it either them drawing from things, they're not drawing from things that I find already enjoyable. Like Last Crusade, I love that type of pulpy, globe-trotting action adventure things. I think it is really good in its original version. And so it doesn't need much updating. It just has to be done well in order for me to be like, yeah, that's great. These things that you're talking about, like you already mentioned, they're kind of racist to begin with. They have some elements that I just don't think age well. And I don't think this movie does anything to update that. And it's just trying to do it well. And I just don't think it's an originally interesting or creative setting. I like the stuff you're saying about Mola Ram. You sound like me talking about why Love Story deserves to be in the top 10 movies of the 1970s. It just seems like you're kind of making a mountain out of a molehill. Which
what?
I mean, that's
okay.
Well, you know, this is your opinion. You're allowed to have your opinion. My opinion is you're making a mountain out of a molehill. That's my opinion. Okay.
You don't think that his design is cool, or that the red lighting just adds to his mystique?
I think Spielberg does a very, very effective job at creating a tone that he's going for. I just think that tone is cartoonishly evil and silly. And so for me, a lot of it is like, yeah, this is like ludicrous. This is not compelling to me. This is just goofy. In a way that I'm like, I think... And this might be insane coming from me as someone who disliked this element of Bone Tomahawk, but to me, if you're going to do something like this, you got to make it way darker in order for it to actually land and not just seem silly. Although there's like a middle zone in between Temple of Doom and Bone Tomahawk where I would really like a story like this, but neither of these movies hits it. I think Temple of Doom is too childish and silly, and I think Bone Tomahawk is like... gross. So maybe I just don't like any of that, and which again would come back to why I don't like this type of thing, because I feel like it's pulling from a pulpy type of story that I just don't really think I think the ceiling for me maybe is just lower, that like the best Transformers movie even if it's made by like a genius, I still think the best Transformers movie is only ever going to be like a 7 out of 10 for me, because I just don't think as a premise it's that great. And I think these the pulpy stories that Temple of Doom is pulling from, I think it maybe exists in a similar place, that it can only be so good to me because it's just not interesting to me and I don't find it fun or exciting.
Well, it is hard. It's going to be hard to get around that.
Well.
And I do want to say that for as much as I liked Mulla Ram, and you didn't even like the performance?
The performance is all right. Like you said, he's barely in the movie. Like, he shows up right... This is the other thing. The movie's pacing is terrible. Like, he barely shows up.
Yes, the movie is very poorly paced.
All of the other movies have great villains who are consistently in the forefront of the movie, and you're consistently like, man, I hate this scumbag. Why is he back again? I hate it. Belloc sucks. He's terrible. Mulla Ram just, like, randomly shows up, and then he's in, like, two scenes. And to be fair, his introduction scene, that is, like, a great... scene again. Spielberg is a talented director, and he struggles to not make movies that like look great, and he's successfully bringing his vision to the forefront. That opening scene where Mulla Ram rips a dude's heart out of his chest and then puts him in the inexplicable portal to hell that this temple is built on, that's a great, well-made scene. It's just, yeah, the pacing is terrible. Like, this is the introduction to Mulla Ram, and he does nothing else. He's a cartoonish, ridiculous caricature of a villain, and that's all he is. And they don't even have a secondary villain. Like, the original, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark has that one creep who's got his hand tattooed and it's gonna like torture Marion for no reason. Yeah, the SS guy. And it has Belloc, whereas this movie it has Mulla Ram, who's a cartoonish ridiculous villain, and then it's got that other dude who barely shows up and doesn't factor in. Yeah, sure. Whatever you say, dude. And then
the Prime Minister?
Yeah. And then, like, the kid who's just, like, there to have a fight with Short Round.
Well, that's unfortunate. I think you're right, though. I mean, I think that we're both right. That's okay. How I'm going to rationalize it. I still liked Mulla Ram. I definitely can see why people would not like him. Because you're right. Nothing of what you're saying is wrong, right? He is a caricature. He doesn't really factor into the movie all that much, aside from being the antagonist. And I think that the thuggy in general, right, I'm just going to carve out a little exception for Mulla Ram. And I'm going to talk about the thuggy, which is, in case you're wondering, where the word thug comes from. I think that the thuggy are not great as a, like, broad antagonist. And this is one of those points of contrast between the movies that I think goes to show why Indiana Jones works and why this movie doesn't work quite as well, is that the Nazis, because the reason they used the thuggy is because they didn't want to use Nazis again. And unfortunately for them, they stumbled upon the perfect foil for Indiana Jones in the Nazis, right?
Yeah.
Because the Nazis, they're driven by cultural avarice, right? They want to just have stuff. They don't really understand or respect the cultural traditions and history that they're just kind of taking stuff from. They only understand and respect its power. Or they don't even respect its power or understand it. They just know that it has that and they want to abuse it, right?
Yeah.
And Indiana Jones, in contrast, he's a preservationist. He knows the history. He appreciates, ostensibly, the context that these artifacts are in. And that's why the Nazis work so well as an Indiana Jones antagonist, because Indiana Jones wants to preserve and disseminate these things for the good of all mankind, right? So that everyone can see and understand and learn from these things, whereas the Nazis just want to use them as part of their war machine. And that's why it's always so satisfying, at least for me, that the Nazis, because they don't understand and don't respect the power that they're messing with, right? They always end up with their faces getting melted off. And the thuggy, you just don't get that from the thuggy, right? Because A, they're not, they may not have even existed, or they didn't exist to the extent that the British said that they existed. B, they're not as well known as the Nazis. And C, this nebulous plan that they have to get the Sankara stones and take over the world. It's like step one, Sankara stones, step two, world domination. And for the Nazis, you can easily slot in the intervening steps, right? Because you understand the Nazis. It's not the same thing with the thuggy, right? They don't have an army. They've got like a couple dozen guys. The Sankara stones, we don't really know what they are or what they're going to do for the thuggy. So I think that we're just, as the audience, or certainly I as an audience member, was less invested in that because the contrast between the thuggy and Indiana Jones is not as pronounced, not as interesting as the contrast between the Nazis and Indiana Jones. And because their ultimate plan is, by virtue of their relative obscurity, is a little bit less to be... oh my gosh, let me just reset for a minute here. I was not able to invest in that threat to the same extent that I am in the threat of, right, Adolf Hitler having the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, you know, you're really getting me to talk down the movie. Eventually, I'll get to positives for it. But we've already mentioned that the pacing of this movie is poor, and I think, you know, it just deserves to be hit again because the pacing of the other movies is so great in terms of how many little moments it affords the characters in between the action sequences, whereas Temple of Doom affords none of those. It's basically just as soon as they find the secret entrance to the thuggy vault, it's like wall-to-wall action for the rest of the movie. There's no moment where the characters get to quip, get to talk to one another, get to establish any sort of rapport. And I guess the hope is that they would establish this rapport before this point in the movie, and then they would just kind of have to do a breakneck race to the climax. But I don't think they really do. Like, Willie, I'm not even sure why she's in the movie. I don't understand why she couldn't have just, like, left after they, like, got to the plane and been like, hey, I don't have to go anywhere. Like, I can do whatever I want. I can leave. I'm assuming that she left because she was afraid that the one gangster guy was going to kill her for aiding Indiana Jones, even though she didn't really aid him that much. And then I have no criticisms of Short Round and Indy. They're fantastic. Their rapport is amazing. When they're playing poker and they're both like cheating and accusing each other of cheating, great scene. Amazing. It's just there's none of that in the later parts of the movie. Again, all of the best parts of the latter half of the movie are either a good action scene or Short Round just being amazing. When he tells Indiana Jones, like, when he says, I love you, Indy, and then Indy hits him, I'm like, dude, that is tough. Don't hit that small child. That's awful. Fortunately, for no reason in particular, fire breaks the curse of the blood of Kali or whatever it is. Again, another unexplained, ridiculous thing that feels like a screenwriter's contrivance and not, you know, an intricately placed piece of the plot. Like, again, I can't think of a single thing in Last Crusade or Raiders that isn't in some way relevant or isn't in some way set up previously, whereas this movie is just, you know, throwing some nonsense at us.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And in fact, it was like you were taking the words right out of my head. You were like Mola Ram reaching into me and pulling stuff out. Because far and away, my least favorite part about this movie is the pacing. Because it's like the first half is pretty flabby. Because we have this opening, and I like the opening, where he's in full James Bond mode. He's in the white suit.
He's wearing the James Bond suit. Like, that's crazy.
He's dealing with criminals. It's breakneck. It's fast. It's exciting. And then Then there's just like a very protracted setup where we're kind of just information dumping on the audience, so that we know what the Sankara stones are, what the Thuggy is, where we are in the world, stuff like that. And then from the attempted sacrifice scene where Willy is almost put into the portal to hell, from then until the very end of the movie, it is essentially one long, protracted action sequence. Mm-hmm. Because there's Indy fighting off the saving Willy, and then having the fight with the big bruiser in the mines, and then the minecart chase, and then the climax on the bridge, and then the movie's over. That's not great, guys. You're, and the thing is, you're so right. Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark are perfectly lean. Like, there is not an ounce of fat on those movies. Everything that happens in the movie is contributing to this driving momentum. It's contributing to our understanding of the characters or the momentum of the plot. And in this movie, the balance is just off, right? It's just like the scenes, the action, and the exposition kind of sit uncomfortably next to each other. They're kind of chafing up against each other because there's not those fantastic transitions, or it's just not as smooth as the other movies. Like, we're kind of stumbling through exposition and then launching through action after action after action. And some of the action is great and some of the exposition is serviceable. but the end product is just a little bit more cumbersome than the other two movies.
Yeah. I mean, you really are talking me down on this movie.
Let's talk about some good things.
Well, let me just add one more negative thing. Oh, gosh. This just bugged the living daylights out of me. Why on earth did Molo Ram go onto the rope bridge in the finale? All he has to do to win is not idiot. And why was he telling Willy and Short Round to go on the rope bridge? Was he thinking that Indy wouldn't cut it if they were on it? He wouldn't cut it if you kept them within arm's reach and clearly said, hey, if you do any nonsense, I will kill them. Molo Ram just completely fumbles a climax that he 100% deserves to win. He should win this finale easily. Although in reality, all Indiana Jones had to do was buy like 10-ish minutes in time for the British to show up and kill all the Thuggies. But Molo Ram doesn't know that. I just don't understand why he goes on the bridge. It just doesn't make any sense to me. What a stupid, stupid thing for the villain to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're right. But
that has nothing to do with anything.
Amrish is so... he's doing so well.
Oh, whatever. Anyway, we were going to talk about positives.
Well, now that you've brought that up, I want to say something that bothered me a little bit. Uh-oh. After the opening, they get away from the gangster, Lao She, and they get onto a plane that Lao She owns, I guess. And they're flying through the air, and the pilots, who of course are in Lao's employment and don't like Indiana Jones for that reason, they decide to kill their passengers by crashing the plane. So they get out. But they get out presumably to starve to death in the Himalayas. In the Himalayas. Like, what was their plan? Because they jump out of the plane when it is flying over the mountain range. So they're just going to die. That's a little silly. And of course, them surviving by jumping out on an inflatable raft. What do you think that's going to do, dude? That's not going to help you. You're still falling from thousands of feet air, but you've got like 2 inches of rubber in between you and the ground, and you think that you're going to be okay? I'm afraid that's not true. But anyway, yeah, let's talk positives.
Yeah, positives. Like I've already mentioned, Short Round, huge positive. I love him. He's great. He's super funny. Every scene with him is really fun. Is better for having him in the scene. The one scene of Indiana kind of flirting with Willy is classic Indiana Jones flirting, that it's just ridiculous. Again, very Bond-esque flirting here as well. Very goofy in a way that I kind of like. Also, like I've already mentioned, Steven Spielberg doesn't really know how to make a movie that looks bad. And, I mean, he's killing it here. All of the stuff in the sacrifice scenes is fantastic. It looks like just the worst place you could ever imagine going to.
It looks like the kind of place that would have a portal to hell.
Yeah. It looks like a map from Doom or something like that. It's crazy.
That's so true.
The scene where someone tries to kill Indy in his bedroom, that's a great scene. Lots of great shadow work, classic Spielberg shadow play sort of stuff. The action scenes, they are really good. I don't understand why Mola Ram walked out onto the bridge like that, but that's a great scene. Like, Indy cutting the bridge and then climbing up and fighting people, that's a great moment. The minecart chase scene, I remember this one primarily from, Elliot, here's waxing nostalgic for you. You remember that Indiana Jones game that we had?
Oh, the, like, interactive adventure
thing? Yes, and in order to get... you were trying to get the three, like, items from the movie. So you were trying to get the Holy Grail, the Ark of the Covenant, and the Sankara Stones. And I remember this being the Sankara Stones being the hardest one to get, because the little mini game, in order to get it, you had to, like, trigger all of the, like, stuff that they trigger in the movie. So you have to, like, knock down all the stuff to dump the dirt on the guys. You have to hit the right levers to go to the right, like, places and stuff. And I just remember it being way harder than the other ones, which were just, like, spell Jehovah with an I. And I can't even remember what you had to do for... I think you had to get through a maze or something.
Dude, you had to get through the snakes. You had to not walk on... You not had to... navigate through the snakes in the tomb.
Yeah.
And it was total BS, because there were points where you just straight up could not see if there was a snake in front of you or not, because of the shadows. So
maybe that one was harder.
I was going to say that one, the mind segment was the hardest by design. I think that the walking through the snakes was the most unfair.
Yeah.
Because you just straight up had to guess sometimes.
Funny. But yeah, the minecart scene, that's a great chase scene. The other stuff, like the one shot of Indy punching the brute while Short Round is in the background punching the prince or whatever, that's a great shot. I really wish they could have found a better way to do it. If they had done, like, split diopter and they were both genuinely in the shot and they didn't have to do a bit like a pan thing, that would have been sick. But even as it is, that's a fun little shot. Although, again, it just highlights how useless Willy is. What on earth is she doing? She is also there, and she's not helping in the slightest. But yeah, those things were all great. And yeah, the opening, outside of the bizarre choice to open with a dance number to a Mandarin version of Anything Goes. I love Anything Goes. That's a great song. What a weird opening, though.
I second all of that. Short Round is so good, dude. I love him so much in this movie. He's such a great... I mean, he's so simple, but he's such a perfect sidekick for Indiana Jones. And yeah, the scene where they start arguing in Japanese over who's cheating. And yeah, just after when Indiana Jones turns evil, and that was really upsetting to me as a child, seeing Indiana Jones be evil, it just made me very sad. After the whole action scene is done, all right, before we get into the next action scene, when Indiana Jones just kneels down in front of Short Round and just gives him a hug, I was like, oh yeah, man, that is just warming my heart right up, Spielberg.
That's great stuff.
And he says, I'm sorry, kid. Yeah. And I just love it. I'm actually getting goosebumps talking about it right now. And just to take a little bit of a shot at James Bond, I feel like this is why I love Indiana Jones so much more than James Bond, who I don't love at all, because James Bond would never do something so tender, true, and kind and, right, you know, like an actual hero. He would never be so heroic as Indiana Jones as to just have this human moment with someone that he cares about and just to say I'm sorry and that we're still good and we're still friends. And yeah, it's fantastic. What were you gonna say?
I mean, that's so true. James Bond would never even think of interacting with a child. If he can't sleep with them or punch them, why would he interact with a person? And so children are just irrelevant to the franchise.
They just don't exist.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a single child ever playing any sort of relevance to any James Bond plot. I got nothing, dude. I really don't think there might be some people who are like minors in the movie in the sense that they're like under 18, but they're definitely like 17 and they're like helping the plot somehow. Yeah, that's
yeah
crazy.
And you know, for those kids, if they're female, James Bond is just rubbing his grubby little hands together being like, one more year. Gosh, I hate James Bond.
All right,
let's terrible character.
Oh no. Okay, well, he has other things that make James Bond good. We're not here to talk about James Bond.
Right, we're here to talk about Indiana Jones. So yeah, some of the these action scenes. I mean, I really miss this kind of action. This way of choreographing, I mispronounce words, choreographing and shooting action. It's hard to describe, but there's just something a little bit more visceral about it, and maybe it's the sound effects, and maybe it's the fact that, right, it's just a little bit more imperfect than modern filmmaking, that you can kind of see the moments where they're stitching things together, and they're shooting things in such a way so that the clearly not hitting them punches are actually hitting them. I don't know. It's just there's just something that I like about it. The Indiana Jones style melees. They're not. I think what it is is that they're not over choreographed or under choreographed, right? Mm. So they're not like your prequel Star Wars lightsaber fights where it's just a little bit overwrought, and it's not like the action scenes in Taken, where you can't even see what's happening because the choreography is pretty lacking and Liam Neeson is kind of just throwing right hooks and stuff. But yeah, so there's more creativity in it, and there's just more fun moments, like when the guy charges at Indiana Jones and he's got the spear, and Indy like grabs the spear and makes the guy pole vault by like jamming the point of the spear into the ground, so the guy goes flying into the portal to hell. Rest in peace, that guy.
Ridiculous.
And speaking of which, I just want to say, let's hear it for the set designers, right? I mean, that statue of Kali, that thing is awesome, and the whole temple looks great, and the mines and the palace, it all just looks fantastic. It's stuff that I just want to be in there, man. I just want to visit this set and see what it's like and what it looks like. And yeah, the lighting is great, especially on Mola Ram, great villain. I don't care what anyone else says. this movie really is firing on all cylinders on the technical front. I would say just as much as Last Crusade and Raiders. Mm. And yeah, Short Round is fantastic, and I'm so happy. I hadn't even thought about Short Round returning in Dial of Destiny, but you saying that made me retroactively dislike Dial of Destiny more for not having Short Round in it. Can you imagine just like Kehu Kwan saying something off screen and Harrison Ford just being like, "Shorty, it's you"? That would have been great. What a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Instead we got, I like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but come on now.
Yeah, and Teddy doesn't hold a candle to Short Round.
I can't remember that character.
He's Phoebe Waller-Bridge's little sidekick kid.
Oh, yes. Vaguely. Anyway, I'm ready to get to ratings here for this movie.
Well, I just want to say one more thing in terms of a point of comparison between this movie and the others, and that's the love interest. did not like Willy in this movie, and nobody really likes Willy in this movie, and I feel like Kate Capshaw is kind of hard done by, right? Because she's a perfectly fine actress, and she's doing her best with what she can here, but she's got nothing. Willy is useless, and I honestly understand the mindset behind this character, because we had Marion, and they don't want to do the same thing. That was kind of their whole mindset for the sequels. They don't want to do the same thing as Raiders. They want to do new stuff. And I agree with that. I'm on board, and I think it works in places in this movie. But here, I think that Willy is, she's just useless. And if you think about Marion, right, she's very much a foil for Indiana Jones. She's hard-willed, or strong-willed, sorry. She's got some wit and some sass to her. Mm-hmm. And even though she doesn't do a whole lot, I feel like in her scenes, she has her own agenda and her own motivation, right? She's trying to do things. And Willy is not. Willy is a passenger in this movie in a way that Marion wasn't.
Yeah.
And so I think that if you wanted to do something different for the love interest, then you should have done as they did with Last Crusade, right? I think that Elsa works really well because they made her kind of a secondary antagonist and had kind of a more like, I don't know, I struggle to say will they, won't they, because Indiana Jones won't by the end. But she's more complicated, right? Yeah. She's not an out-and-out good guy or bad guy. I mean, she's a Nazi, so she's a bad guy. But she's more conflicted than your average character. And yeah, it just really works for that movie. But to have Willy, who just does nothing, like, there was one moment where I liked Willy, and that's where she's about to get sacrificed, and Indy puts her into the little cage thing and she spits in his face. Mm. And it showed a moment of defiance and a moment of, I struggle to say agency, but just a bit of characterization for Willy that's not just shrieking constantly.
Yeah.
And being completely unable to relate to her surroundings with any kind of physical or mental capability. So to have this moment where, with nothing else to do, she just spits in her face as one last, right, defiant stand, I was like, whoa, Willy's actually doing something rather than just screaming or being a bit of a ditzy character.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Kate Capshaw because that's really the only moment where I liked Willy, and she just doesn't have anything to do. Unfortunate.
All right, well, I agree. I've already said how I feel about Willy. Let's get to ratings here. Let me first of all just say, Last Crusade, Raiders of the Lost Ark, those are 10 out of 10 movies. Those are both perfect. If that this has turned into like a pseudo review of those two as well as points of comparison. This movie, not as good as those two. I'm giving it like a 6.3 out of 10 for all of the things. I think I was at like a 6.6, and I've just been talked down. The pacing issues, the characterization, just the in general, it pulling from a source that I just don't think is really worth returning to, and certainly isn't worth returning to in the way that this movie and some other movies I've seen tries to pull from it. So that's where I've ended up on this one, 6.3.
Well, I like Weird Tales. I think it's interesting. Weird Tales, that's where Lovecraft got to start, in case you're wondering.
Oh, gosh. More racism.
Well, yeah, Lovecraft was not a great person, but he's a very good writer. One last thing that I wanted to say on the racism bit is it shouldn't be left unsaid that the dinner scene, probably the scene, the film's most controversial scene, is very silly. And not just because it's just a silly concept and this like weird gross out scene where people are eating stuff. It's also, it's, in case you didn't know, none of these are actually things that people in India eat. They do not eat chilled monkey brains. They don't eat eyeball soup. Who even came up with that? Yeah, that's very silly.
Well, and this is, I mean, you've got me jumping in once again and prolonging the episode, but this is another thing that contributes to the movie being, having a, like, cartoonish tone that the other movies just don't have. I mean, the movies are pulpy, but they're not, like, something that you would, I mean, this is cartoonish. This is ludicrous. Yeah, like you mentioned, them having, like, live tapeworms or something like that, that is, like, something you'd see in a compilation of like Looney Tunes racist moments or whatever or something, that it's like a chilled monkey brains with like the monkey's head on the plate. That's ridiculous.
Yes. And so a little bit of context here, supposedly, now I'm getting this from an interview with the actor of Chatter Lal. He said that this scene was supposed to be a joke, that the people of this palace were playing a prank on the British, and then the Americans who come in by serving them all of this ridiculous stuff that they don't eat. And he said that it was supposed to be, right, they were making fun of them, and that it was a joke that just was, that just was missed by people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I have not been able to find any, I've not been able to find like Spielberg or the writers confirming that. If that is true, I would say that the scene is not exactly salvaged, because that is a weird joke. And yeah, it's, it was certainly surprising to read that, because when I watched the scene, I was looking for it and I was like, I'm not seeing any kind of winking to the audience.
There's or, no textual like, evidence for that.
Exactly. Yes, Nathan. Thank you. I'm struggling to find textual evidence for the humor in this scene that isn't just right, the gross out humor of, look, they're eating snakes that are served from a live, or not a live, that are served from the body of a dead boa constrictor. What? Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Crazy.
But who knows? Maybe it was supposed to be a joke and we just missed it. I don't know. So yeah, I'm at the same place where I was when I started it, because I'm a bit more, I have a stronger constitution than Nathan, and I'm stronger in my opinions. Mm-hmm. I think that this movie is pretty good. It's clearly the worst of the original trilogy. This movie must have been so relieved when Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out, and I was like, oh, thank goodness, something worse. And then when Dial of Destiny came out, it must have been like, woo, I'm back in it, baby. But yeah, clearly the worst of the original trilogy. It's got some, it's structured very oddly in terms of its pacing. Willy is not a great character, not a great love interest. The thuggy, right? Indiana Jones, I think he just needs to be fighting Nazis. I think that that's kind of his, the best villain for him, right? You can try with the Soviets. You can try with this weird Indian cult, but it just doesn't work the same way. And yet, Indiana Jones at his worst, or at was once his worst, original Indiana Jones at his worst, is still, there's still something to it. I really liked Short Round. We didn't even talk really about Indiana Jones himself or Harrison Ford, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nathan, but that's just kind of because it just works, right? There's not much to say about Indiana Jones or Harrison Ford, because we just all understand that this is a good character, and Harrison Ford is the perfect actor for him.
Yeah.
Some great action sequences. I understand. I've made jokes. I think Nathan is right, that Mola Ram is objectively not a great villain, but I really liked him because of the movie's technical elements, which are fantastic. The lighting, the set design, it's all great. I was just more moved by the kind of pulp that this movie was drawing from. With all that said, I'm going to give it a B. Right?
Wow.
Just it's a B movie, right?
I guess. Speaking of B movies, let's get to some recommendations here. My recommendation, Elliot, you're going to really love this one. I'm going to recommend Thunderball, baby. It's a James Bond film, and the entire, obviously, Harrison, the first scene with Indy, he's wearing the James Bond suit from Goldfinger. I thought about recommending Goldfinger, which is one of the better Sean Connery Bond movies, but Thunderball is probably my favorite of these. It has, it's a very similar tone to Indiana Jones. It's very clear the influences that they're pulling from in terms of the type of person James Bond is. Like we already mentioned, he doesn't interact with kids quite as much as Indiana Jones does in this movie, but certainly his flirting style, the way he methodically goes about things and just absolutely like, there's never any doubt that he's going to beat the villains because they're just stupid and he's James Bond. He's amazing. Thunderball is one of my favorite ones. It has one of my favorite Sean Connery Bond moments of all time, where he tells a woman that he only slept with her in service of, like, in Her Majesty's service or so. He says some ridiculous pro-Britain thing about it. There's a lot of really great underwater sequences in this movie. Almost every James Bond movie has some crazy stunt where you're like, that's nuts, how'd they film that? This one has a really great sequence where James Bond is escaping sharks in a pool that is tough to imagine how they did it outside of just putting Sean Connery in a pool with a bunch of sharks. Which is how they did. There's a stunt in Live and Let Die where someone runs over a bunch of live crocodiles, and they did just have a stunt guy run over live crocodiles. So the stunt work is great. I think if you want another movie that's the same tone as Temple of Doom, if you really loved the type of pulpy that Temple of Doom is, I think you would probably really enjoy the type of pulpy that these early James Bond movies are. So Thunderball is going to be my pick. It's probably my favorite Sean Connery Bond flick.
I completely forgot about him saying, I did what I did for God and country.
It's a great moment.
Wow. Well, so I no funny. Longer feel bad about liking Mulla Ram. If you like that, I feel like you're right, so kind of funny. Throwing stones in glass houses.
No, that's so true.
Shut up. You were completely wrong, Nathan. I don't love that recommendation at all. What are you talking about? That movie's a total farce. And just like everything James Bond does.
Holy cow.
So, yeah. I do not second that recommendation. My recommendation is going to be Excalibur. This is a 1980s, also 1980s movie based on The Legend of King Arthur. This is a famous adaptation, and the reason I chose it is because it's got the same kind of dark fantasy, right, vibe as Temple of Doom. And it's got the same creative, slightly off-kilter action choreography. Basically, it's got that same kind of edge to it in terms of its pulpiness, because this is a pretty pulpy movie. But it's got that same edge as that Temple of Doom has. It's an adventure with a bit of intensity. It's drawing on these classic archetypes from medieval literature and literature in general. Some great set design. Something that we didn't mention that I think the original Indiana Jones trilogy does better than anyone else in the business is rotting corpses. No one does a better corpse or skeleton than original Indiana Jones. But this movie, it's got some pretty good corpses in it. If you like Temple of Doom for its darker tone, its more intense elements, but still the classical pulp core at the heart of it, then I think that you'll like Excalibur.
I have not seen that movie, cannot second it, but that's a very interesting choice.
Well, I'm an interesting person. One of the most interesting things about me is my opinion that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Interesting.
That's downright banal, because everyone knows it. Everyone knows that life is hard and full of disappointments.
All right, well, thank you so much for listening. This is going to be it for us. Do you love Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? Do you feel like we're missing something? You know, are you a big Kingdom of the Crystal Skull fan? Here's actually what I want to know. Contrast, do you think communists or Nazis are better foils for Indiana Jones? Send us an email. Ellie, we got to ask Hot Topic questions in order to get responses back.
I don't think I want the kind of responses that question is going to generate.
Send us an email. If you have a request for a movie that you would like us to review, send us one of those. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be reviewing another new movie. Very exciting, as always. You know, just such a joy to do this. So we hope you have a great week, and we hope you tune in then.